This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Dashrin Johan. Last Friday, the Malaysian Immigration Department uploaded a poster across all social media platforms, essentially telling Rohingya migrants that they're not welcomed here. The cinematic poster, which mirrors that of action films, if I'm being perfectly honest, think the likes of Pascal or Police Evo, contains three armed soldiers and words that read, "Migrant ethnic Rohingya, kedatangan anda tidak diundang," which basically translates to ethnic Rohingya migrants are not welcome here. The poster was eventually taken down by the Immigration Department after plenty of pushback from social media users. Now, while that was the right move, as with many things on the internet, once it's uploaded, it will find a way to live on forever. And in this context, you know, live on through forwarded WhatsApp messages and whatnot. But what are the potential impacts of such a poster? Joining me on the show today to help me unpack this is Katrina Joreen Maliamau, the Executive Director of Amnesty International Malaysia, and Aslam Abdul Jalil, who's doing his postgraduate research in refugee policy at the University of Queensland. Welcome to the show, guys. How are you all doing this morning?
Thank you very much.
Hi, thanks for having us hanging in there, despite the circumstances.
Yeah, I think hanging in there is the perfect way to put it, right? I want to get both your takes on this first question. What was your initial reaction towards the poster? I mean, what did you make of the way the quote-unquote characters in the posters are framed, the way they're posing, the red bold letters, the messaging, all of it? What was your initial reactions, Katrina?
You know, when I first looked at it, and I'm also just looking at it now, I think initially, of course, anger and disgust. So many things struck me. You know, these men in full militarized gear, the fact that they were wearing face masks, you know, which sort of signaled a recognition of the, that they knew the time that we're in, it's a global pandemic. They recognize that. And the contradiction of this kind of messaging when we have been practicing looking out for each other because this pandemic has called for that response. I was looking at all the warships and the weapons and the helicopters and wondering, you know, how much in our ringgit, the thousands or millions from our public funds that was going to this. I was thinking about, you know, those large weapons that the enforcement officers held. You know, you don't carry a weapon unless you plan on using it. So was this them saying that they plan on shooting people down? Mm-hmm. Then you see the other boat, you know, packed with people, and they're so small that you almost don't realize they're there. And these are people who, you know, based on the poster, are meant to be the Rohingya. And they're people who have somehow survived ethnic cleansing. They have faced down the Burmese military and vigilantes, and they've lived. These are people who are, you know, stuck in boats, floating in a really rough and uncertain ocean. Maybe they're standing in piss and waste and human excrement. Maybe they're dehydrated and terrified. Maybe they are next to somebody that they know or love who is slowly dying as they are out in sea. Mm-hmm. And I say all of this because this is testimonies from people who have survived these boat journeys. And this is what they're met with, right, in this poster. This is what the Malaysian government is saying we will do to you should you survive all that and come to us. And I kept thinking about that quote from Maya Angelou, you know, when people show you who they are, believe them.
Right.
And so this is the signaling from the state. It is, you know, you will see at the bottom of that poster the Bahagian Strategic Communications. So this is a strategic communication from the National Task Force. And so I think we should take it seriously, even if the poster has been taken down.
Aslam, what do you think? Because like Katrina brought up, right, if you look at the posers, the big guns, the warships and all that, you know, it's very cinematic. It tells a story, first glance, as if, you know, these are the biggest heroes, the Avengers, who are about to march into battle against, you know, terrorist organizations or Nazi soldiers, you know, things like that. But that's actually not the reality, is it?
Yeah, it's just a shame, you know, just like what Katrina described, you know, the horrific messages being sent by the state through this poster. And we have to know, we have to bear in mind that, you know, Rohingya, they are the survivors of genocide. So they have been facing persecution for so many years. And now with this kind of poster, it basically just undermines our nation's morality and, you know, compassion in saving people who are in need, when Malaysia always mentions about our humanitarian, based on humanitarian grounds, that we help to host these refugees. So this poster actually undermines our efforts all this while. And furthermore, Malaysia is also eyeing for a seat in the UN Human Rights Council for the 2022 and until 2024 term. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, this, we don't walk the talk that, you know, we champion human rights, but at the same time, this is the messaging that we're sending. And it also, you know, reveals our hypocrisy. You know, we already extended a strong solidarity towards Palestinians, which is great, overwhelming solidarity towards the Palestinian. So we also need to extend the same spirit to save our brothers and sisters, Rohingya refugees, or anyone who is being oppressed.
Katrina, Aslam brought up the Palestinians, and I think he brings up a fantastic point. And I think what he brought up is something that has caused a lot of Malaysians, I think people who really care about these issues especially, to be particularly confused. Even I find myself confused sometimes, Katrina, because only a couple of weeks ago, the Malaysian government was showing solidarity with Palestinians. In fact, a few years ago, the government, the Barisan National Government at the time, was talking about being in solidarity with the Rohingyas and even talking about all the great work activists are doing with the Rohingya community, with the Rohingya refugees, and so on and so forth. But now it seems like since last year, the narrative has suddenly changed. So what could be the possible reason for the double standard between seemingly one group of refugees and another group of refugees, or even within the same group, when we look at a few years ago compared to now, there's seems to be a change in direction or mindset towards the issue. Help me make sense of this, Katrina.
No, I think it's so important that we reflect on this. And when we put out, as Amnesty International, the statement in response to the poster, we pointed out, right, how grotesque it was that they would, on, you know, 1 week talk about being pro-Palestine and then a week or 2 weeks later come out with this kind of messaging. But I do want us to sit with this and reflect a little bit, right? So were they, you know, first of all, were they showing real solidarity with Palestinians, or were they putting out PR messages to position themselves as pro-Palestinian? Mm. You know, because I asked this because at the exact moment that they are saying they support Palestine, Palestinian refugees in Malaysia are suffering. You cannot say that you're pro-Palestine and then displace people off their land as they're doing in Malaysia, especially to indigenous peoples. You cannot say that you're pro-Palestine and then tell people fleeing conflict that they will be met with violence. To be in solidarity with Palestine is not to put out messages of, you know, saying that we're in solidarity, but then failing to act and live out that solidarity. You know, to be in solidarity with Palestine is to reject these policies and cultures and infrastructures of hatred and discrimination and displacement and dispossession. So similarly, you know, as you pointed out a few years ago, when Barisan national leaders were holding these messages and rallies, quote unquote, in solidarity with Rohingya, at the same time, there were thousands of Rohingya in Malaysia who were actively denied their basic rights, who were being detained, who were pushed away from our borders into the wide open sea. Are you in solidarity with Rohingya if you don't use your position of power in ASEAN to stop the violence against the Rohingya and other people in Myanmar? So I think the hypocrisy of saying one thing and then doing another is actually quite consistent. And as Malaysians, we need to point that out. We need to reject it. We deserve not to be lied to. We deserve not to be gaslit. And certainly our refugees and people surviving conflict deserve so much better.
Certainly. But even within, you know, the context of hypocrisy, right, Katrina, Why do you think there's a change in narrative? That's what I think really can be very confusing. Because if, let's say, the establishment, anti-Rohingyas for consistently, you know, that's their messaging. Although we obviously don't agree with that, maybe it's less confusing. But when you say something, you know, and then after that you're saying something else, why is there a change of narrative? I think that's what it really baffles the mind sometimes. What's going on there?
I think it's a escalation or of a ongoing status quo, and I would hesitate to say that it's a change, because I really do think we need to follow the money and we need to see what are the policies and the structure, even when your messaging is something else, right?
Right.
So we know, you know, states or anybody in power, you put out messages that say, you know, things that are positive and good because you want to portray that image, even if that's not what you're doing. That's what a lot of PR campaigns are about, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have to look and see, how does Malaysia want to position itself in the international community? They want to position themselves as being, you know, pro-Rohingya, pro-Palestine, you know, supporters of people, especially Muslim refugees, surviving, you know, all of this acts of discrimination, but they don't actually want to do it. They don't actually want to live out those commitments. I also think there is something here about in the times of conflict that we're in as a country, using, you know, it is a pattern globally and throughout history, where governments may be feeling the heat or a lot shaky in their positions of power, then we'll try and rally people around a common quote-unquote enemy. I think this particular imagery here that you know, when we describe it with these men looking very powerful and having these weapons and saying you're not invited. I mean, that is meant to, I think, for give Malaysians an imagery that we, the state, will protect you against this imagined enemy. And I do think that that is quite significant, given that we are in a context in Malaysia, you know, with, we're all experiencing uncertainties and we're anxious. There's skyrocketing COVID cases. People are losing their jobs. I mean, it's such a precarious time. And so there is something there about showing this image that you are protecting us, quote unquote, protecting us.
Right.
And making us feel or trying to make us feel like they have our backs. And you see this poster as part of the other kinds of messaging that's coming out saying, you know, we will not let you come here because, you know, the rights of the rakyat Malaysia has to be upheld. We have to strongly reject that, you know. The enemy here isn't the Rohingya or the refugee or the migrant. The enemy, if there is an enemy, and if you want to use that language, is all these infrastructures and policies that are actually degrading our rights, that are making it hard for us to survive in these times.
Aslam, I want to also talk a little bit about the kind of language or vocabulary, words that are specifically chosen in this poster. Because the poster says migrant ethnic Rohingya, kedatangan anda tidak diundang. But Rohingyas that come to Malaysia aren't migrants, are they? They're refugees. What's the difference, Aslam? And is it important to use these terms properly, or can we just use them interchangeably?
Yes, the terms are very important. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the official narrative in Malaysia, everyone who has no documents basically is considered as pendatang asing tanpa izin, or they like to call it illegal migrants, which is not true. So there are different categories, asylum seekers / refugees, and also migrants. So asylum seekers are those people who are seeking protection because they are persecuted based on their race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group or political opinion, as well as refugees, actually. But the distinction between asylum seekers and refugees is that asylum seekers actually seek protection, and only once they are proven to be fleeing from persecution, they will be granted refugee status and will be called refugees. So it's just a legal and technical term. So overall, asylum seekers and refugees, they share the common purpose of saving their lives from persecution back home. Whereas for migrants, they have the choice and opportunity to migrate voluntarily. And, you know, they have their home countries to go back to if they want, if they choose to go back to. Whereas asylum seekers and refugees, this is not an option to them. So as we all know, you know, the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, already ruled that Rohingya actually faced genocide. So this means even without the assessment, whether or not they are refugees, you know, through the refugee status determination process, we can consider them as prima facie refugees because we already know their circumstances. And this is the paradox of seeking asylum, seeking protection in our refugee global regime system. Because in order to seek asylum or safety, you have to cross an international border. But at the same time, there is no safe passage to do so because you cannot seek asylum at the nearest embassies, for example.
Right.
So for Rohingya refugees, they are stuck there. It's either they just wait to be killed or, you know, they have to take the perilous journeys to come to Malaysia or anywhere is safe. So this is the paradox of seeking asylum. And there's also a difference between smuggling and trafficking as well, because these two terms involve people moving to different places. But for smuggling, yes, these people give consent. Yes, they agree. They will pay a certain amount of money to go to somewhere else. However, it's a mixed process. In along the line, if you're being smuggled, you can also be trafficked. So traffic, you know, involves coercion. For example, you are being forced to travel or being deceived as well. And as we all know, many of these refugees actually, you know, initially they would agree, okay, I would pay this certain amount of money to go somewhere else, to go to Malaysia.
Right.
But along the way, you know, they are being deceived. They're being coerced. You know, they are being brutalized by these people. So they are actually the victims of human trafficking. And in our laws, actually, we cannot punish the victims of human trafficking. We should actually punish and target the people smugglers as well as human traffickers instead of the innocent Rohingya refugees.
If I could add on to that,
yes.
I think that that, you know, yes, there are sort of distinctions between the refugee and migrant worker. Now, refugees fit within sort of the broad landscape of individuals who migrate. And we make the distinctions between refugees and migrant worker because, as Aslam pointed out, you know, for refugees, the fundamental difference is that there's a well-founded fear of persecution. And so you cannot be sent back home. You cannot return home. The right to seek asylum is guaranteed under the international human rights law, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. In Article 14 affirms that right, which Malaysia, you know, is of course party to as a member of the UN. But I think that, you know, whether someone is coming to seek refuge or to work, this kind of response of abuse and violence and aggression and a denial of basic human rights is unacceptable. So even if somebody was coming as a migrant and they don't have proper documents, that is an administrative matter. Deal with it as if it is such, if it is that it's an administrative matter. This degrading response is never justified. And I think that we have to be very clear on that. That word migrant or migrant here, it serves to erase the perceptions and the imagery of seeking asylum and refuge. It erases that understanding of conflict that's embedded in refugees. And it also is, you know, playing up these divisions of refugee and migrant, you know, who's the desirable person coming here. And I think we have to reject both. We have to reject the violence against refugees and against migrants.
On that note, we do need to go for a very quick break. I'm speaking with Katrina Jorin Maliamau, the Executive Director of Amnesty International Malaysia, and Aslam Abdul Jalil, who's doing his postgraduate research in refugee policy at the University of Queensland. We are talking about the poster that was released by the Immigration Department last Friday, basically telling ethnic Rohingyas that they are not welcomed here in Malaysia. We'll be back on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today are Katrina Jorin Maliamau, Executive Director of Amnesty International Malaysia, and Aslam Abdul Jalil, who's doing his postgraduate research in refugee policy at the University of Queensland. And we're talking about the potential impact of the cinematic poster that was released by the Malaysian Immigration Department last Friday, which reads, "Migrant ethnic Rohingya, kedatangan anda tidak diundang." The poster has since been removed by the Immigration Department. Now, Katrina, here's what's particularly weird. The poster says, as we mentioned a couple of times, "Migrant ethnic Rohingya, kedatangan anda tidak diundang." But the poster is in Bahasa Malaysia, not in the Rohingya language. And so the refugees won't even be able to understand. I mean, sure, there are some refugees who can understand BM and stuff, but broadly speaking, most of them will not be able to understand the language, what more read it. So who exactly is this poster targeted towards?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a messaging in Malaysia, right? So I don't know if there's parallel sort of messages being handed out in Bangladesh or in Myanmar. Probably they are, but I don't know. And also, yes, you know, there are actually lots of Rohingya who can read and speak BM very fluently, because we mustn't forget that they've been here. Many Rohingya have been here for generations. People have been born here, grew up here. And so I think it is also messaging to the Rohingya community here, who may have family and friends and loved ones who are trying desperately to get out and seek asylum. And it's telling them that they are unwanted. It's also messaging to migrants and refugees here more broadly that the state machinery isn't going to let you feel welcome. But the larger messaging, I do think, is to Malaysians. And so earlier I talked about the way it's framed as if that, you know, it's going to protect you, right? Protect us as Malaysians. I think it is a show to Malaysians that the government has our interests at heart. If you take having our interests at heart to mean, you know, punishing people for coming to seek safety here, which is what they're saying, right? So this poster sits within a landscape of other commentary about how migrants are linked to COVID, migrants are here to take away our own rights, migrants are here to... So that kind of inaccurate and harmful framing positions the state then as quote-unquote the saviour of us, when we know that isn't true. You don't save us or protect our rights by harming other people. I also think it gives permission to hate groups, and it's a signalling, right, that for people to act in discriminatory and even violent ways against Rohingya and migrants and refugees in Malaysia. I think it's meant to be a quote-unquote rallying cry of nationalistic energy, a unifying force in that way. And again, this goes back to the state trying to position itself as having the interest of citizens at heart by discriminating against migrants. And of course, you know, if we thought about it for even a minute, we know that we are not protected when other people are harmed.
Aslam, what is the potential impact of such a poster being released?
Definitely, it stigmatizes refugees and migrants who have become the victims of wars and human trafficking. And also it undermines, our status, you know, our prestige as a country which wants, you know, to help people who are in need. So Malaysia does not only have moral obligation, but also legal obligation. Let me tell you why we have the legal obligations to actually save people who are distressed at sea. Mm-hmm. So normally Malaysia will say, oh, we're not signatory country to the Refugee Convention, and therefore, you know, it's not our problem. You know, we are not supposed to save them. But do you know, Malaysia actually is a signatory to the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, UN Clause 1982, and Malaysia signed this Constitution for the Oceans on 10 December 1982. And Article 98 of UNCLOS actually spells out two important points. Number one, to rescue people at risk of being lost at sea. And number two, to maintain search and rescue services. And also, Malaysia also signed the International Convention for the Safety of Life at Sea, SOLAS 1974, which came into effect in 1984. And SOLAS actually is enforced through our Malaysian law. It's called Merchant Shipping Ordinance 1952. And in Section 280, it spells out the obligation to assist vessels in distress. So in this case, we have the obligation to actually save people who are, you know, in distress at sea. So don't say that, you know, we're not signatory to the Refugee Convention and therefore we do not have the obligation. And furthermore, in 2007, we actually enacted Anti-Trafficking in Persons and Anti-Smuggling of Migrants Act at TIPSOM. And there's a duty to protect the victims. In this case, you know, most of these people are the victims of human trafficking, and therefore they should be provided shelter, basic needs, counseling, legal advice, and so on, as spelled out in our TIPSOM law. So when we talk about, you know, saving people at sea, it is our moral and also legal obligation. I remember last year, actually, so there were a few boats actually coming on our shores, rowing your boats, basically. And then initially, you know, they were charged at court. Mm-hmm. And in July last year, Alostar High Court threw out a lower court's ruling that 27 Rohingya be caned for entering the country illegally, because the judge actually, you know, acknowledged the inhumane punishment for refugees who actually have, you know, who basically tried to save their lives. Mm-hmm. So this shows that we have the legal obligation to save people who are distressed at sea, as well as the moral obligation.
If I could just add on to the impact of the poster, right? Mm-hmm. Just imagine thinking of yourself as a refugee, as a Rohingya person looking at this, and what you feel, you know, already the context in Malaysia, and we know this, it's not, we don't have to imagine, we can just go and read the reports of the spike in anti-Rohingya in very racist and xenophobic attacks that Rohingya and refugees and migrants have had to endure for the past year. You see these banners being put up, you know, no Rohingya welcome, in shops, in communities, the mental health impact. And then this is a community that's already endured so much trauma and violence. We saw a spate of suicides by people from the Myanmar community in the past year. And so all of this further enables and fosters that climate of hate. And what that does to the targets, to the Rohingya community, I think we cannot emphasize enough. I also think that this poster and the infrastructure of discrimination that it sits within further degrades all of our rights, you know, because our human rights are connected to each other. I said just now that we cannot say that we are protected when other people are harmed. And similarly, you cannot destroy the rights of a group of people without thinking that's going to have an impact on us. And finally, I do think it does something to us as Malaysians, as people, when we look at this imagery, this messaging. What lessons are we learning about how we be as human beings? You know, what does it teach us about, you know, what it means to be humane, to be just, to be kind, to believe in human dignity? You know, Aslam pointed out sort of the laws that we need to respond to and that obligate us to have a human rights response. But in addition to that, I do think we are asked right now to think about actually what do we believe in is the right way to be a human being, to affirm human dignity. You know, the culture is just a reproduction of our choices, what we choose to teach and do. Is this culture of violence and hatred what we want to reproduce?
On a separate note, we say, you know, the Rohingyas are not welcome here. Where do we expect them to go? I think that seems to be the question that nobody in power seems to be answering, right? Because these are people, a lot of them, you know, especially when we're talking specifically about Rohingyas, is like you guys have brought up, these are people that fled their country because there is ethnic cleansing and mass genocide happening in their country. They are being oppressed, they are being suppressed, they are being murdered, they are being raped, and that's why they are leaving their country. So where do we expect them to go when we say they are not welcome here?
Well, there are three durable solutions for refugees: voluntary repatriation, local integration, and resettlement to third countries. So for voluntary repatriation, it seems, you know, it's not possible for Rohingya to return to Myanmar because they are facing genocide and they're stateless over there. For local integration, Rohingya, actually I meet many of them, Rohingya and refugees in Malaysia, they know very well that unfortunately it is not an option to permanently live in Malaysia. Although many of them actually love Malaysia, they feel that Malaysia is their new home. They love this country so much. However, there is no option for them to actually integrate into Malaysian society, to live here permanently. They're well aware of that. And Malaysians, we always complain that Rohingya don't understand Malaysian culture. But the fact is, we do not want them to integrate into our Malaysian society, unfortunately. And this is why, this is the main reason why Rohingya and refugees actually stick within their own community, because, you know, Malaysians generally don't want them to assimilate into our society, because we think if they integrate and assimilate into Malaysian society, they will want to live in Malaysia permanently. And then we complain about their behaviours and so on and so forth, and, you know, having misconceptions and prejudices towards them. So this is a problem. And the last one is resettlement to third countries. Unfortunately, less than 1% of refugees worldwide actually get this opportunity. And Malaysia always wants refugees, Rohingya refugees or any refugees, to be resettled to third countries. But this is a slim option as well, given that the conflict worldwide is getting worse and not much option available for these Rohingya refugees other than living in limbo in Malaysia. So that is why I believe that while we are looking for durable solutions for these Rohingya refugees, we should give them opportunities to live in Malaysia. Number one, to give the right to work, because this is the most important thing. We can utilize their skills and it will create a win-win situation. While they are being in Malaysia, it's better for them to be able to contribute back to the society. And, you know, we also will benefit from their contribution. So this is what I advocate for.
We should ask this question. We should absolutely ask this question. Where do you expect people to go if we say they cannot come into our country? They cannot land when they're floating here trying to seek safety. Are we expecting them to die? Because what is the alternative here? You know, if someone is showing up in a state of distress, they're in a boat, behind them is the open seas, you turn them away, you let them float off into uncertainty, what is going to happen? They're going to die, they're going to drown, they're going to end up at the bottom of the ocean. They may land somewhere else and then get attacked and discriminated. They may return home where they face, you know, more ethnic cleansing, where Myanmar right now is in a state of extreme conflict that is affecting the Rohingya and also others. If this is the kind of messaging that we want, then put out honest posters, say, we will let you die. We will let you drown. We don't care for your lives. We will detain you and we will not let UNHCR access you. I mean, let's not pretend that these are not human beings who are going to suffer the end result of our violent actions. I think there are so many models out there for us that we can just copy and paste. You know what? set up a system that allows people a system of protection. You know, it doesn't cost very much to leave people alone. You know, just let them live their lives. I mean, yes, you do need some kind of reception so that people who are seeking asylum can have their asylum claims sort of looked at, their protection needs met. UNHCRs in Malaysia, don't make it difficult for them to do their jobs. Let them do their jobs. Let them do the interviews. Let them work with refugee communities to set up systems of care and support. If it's, you know, refugee children going to schools, then we just make adjustments within our schools tools to enable that. This is done. It's done over and over again in many countries. We can create a protection system in Malaysia instead of making the choice to invest in, you know, millions of dollars in setting up detention centers and maritime controls and pushing people away. Why don't you take that money and put that into infrastructures of care and protection? We have to set up a holistic refugee policy. We cannot pretend that, you know, people are just going to disappear because we say that we don't want you. People are here because they are seeking safety and asylum. Yes, they cannot go home to their countries right now because it is not safe to go home. Is it an inconvenience to us? Well, maybe we should think about why we respond to people in need with a sense of, oh, it's inconvenient. If our neighbor, if literally my neighbor's home was being flooded, or if their house is on fire, yes, it means something that I have to reshuffle things around to help them, but shouldn't I do it? And this is at the scale of the community at a national level. I think we can. So I do think that we're well overdue having to set up a refugee protection policy. I think we just need to let refugee communities also, once we stop discriminating, once we stop making their lives a living hell here, people will just get on with their lives. They'll find work, you know, they'll have families, their kids will go to school, they will contribute to society, they will participate here in all the ways that many of them want to. They just want to be people living out their lives. I'm saying that we can very easily make the choice for protection, for care, to affirm people's dignity and to affirm people's rights. And that's not so abstract, because this is what we should be doing for all people in Malaysia anyway. The only difference here is that there might be extra protection needs and to deal with sort of the trauma that people are facing because they're seeking asylum.
While we are maintaining our national security, we should not compromise the human security as well, because what we're doing through this poster is that we're targeting the victims of human traffickers and people smugglers. What we need to do instead is to focus on combating trafficking and smuggling by really doing real investigations in our system. You know, we can sit together and engage and have a proper conversation as well as action plan to combat human trafficking and smuggling instead of punishing the victims.
I do want to caution, though, again, sort of the conflation of maybe trafficking and smuggling when we speak about refugees and migration. Mm-hmm. You know, the ways in which trafficking and smuggling is often treated is that those are crimes against the state, the government.
Right.
And not the human person, because Malaysia likes to say, oh, we're strong on human trafficking. And yet you see all these situations where people are exploited in the country. You have the systems of, you know, migration recruitment that sets up exploitation. I also think smuggling has always, it's going to be there because you don't create safe passages for people to come and seek asylum. So it's almost by definition, you have these strict border controls. You classify people as pendatang asing tanpa izin, and then you punish them for entering through ways that are unofficial. Where are the official routes to seek asylum? There aren't any, because people who are coming seek asylum are going to flee often with very little documents or no documents at all, because they're escaping conflict. Many times, and this is true for the Rohingya, you aren't even given the documents, identity documents that you need to get a passport to seek safety. So you cannot have these systems that create unsafe migration and then punish people for using those routes when you don't give them alternatives.
On that note, guys, thanks so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much for just keeping a spotlight on this. And really, you know, I just a final message to Malaysians. Mm-hmm. I think that we are called in this moment of a global pandemic to really think carefully about what it means to be a human being, to extend care. You know, at the start of the lockdown last year, we saw expressions of mutual aid, of so much love and community support and solidarity. I do think that, you know, when we try and imagine a way out of these imageries of harm and violence, it's absolutely possible, because we've been trying to practice it. And now we just need to believe that we can, and to push back against this very harmful, not just messaging, but also the policies that it sits within.
I think that's absolutely well said. Thank you so much once again, Katrina and Aslam.
Thank you very much.
That was Katrina Jorin Maliamau, Executive Director at Amnesty International Malaysia, and Aslam Abdul Jalil, who's doing his postgraduate research in refugee policy at the University of Queensland. And they were helping me unpack the cruel poster that the Immigration Department posted on social media last Friday, telling Rohingyas that they're not welcome here in Malaysia. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app and on bfm.my. I'm Dashrin Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.